Empower Radio presents Art as Worship with Vanessa Lowry.
Welcome to Art as Worship. Each week we feature stories of artists and explore their process of creation. I'm your host, Vanessa Lowry, and I'm thankful that you're joining me today. On this show, I talk to artists of various faiths working in a wide range of mediums on the common theme of how they use inspiration and creativity as an expression of their spirituality. Learn how their art is an expression of their own connection to however they name God, Jehovah, Allah, Source, the universe, the great mystery, or something different. My hope is that these stories will inspire your creative efforts and your own spiritual expression. I'm thrilled to have in the studio with me today Molly Elkind. She's the artist that we're going to be interviewing today. Molly earned her MA in studio art with a concentration in fibers from the University of Louisville. Molly's mixed media embroideries, handmade paper sculptures, wall hangings and collages, and artist books have been exhibited in juried shows locally and nationally. And she's been published in Arts Across Kentucky, Needle Arts, SAQA Journal, and Shuttle Spindle Dyepot magazines, which are magazines I'm not familiar with. But we're thrilled to have Molly with us. She's done some teaching, both in her in a degree in English that she also holds, as well as in art and professional development. She happily accepts commission projects and does liturgical work with a team at Alpharetta Presbyterian Church. Welcome, Molly.
Thank you.
I'm so glad to have you with us today. Your bio mentions that you work in fibers as one of your mediums. Can you tell me a little bit more about how you create your art?
Sure. I've done a variety of different fiber techniques over the past 20 years, including, as you just mentioned, papermaking, also contemporary embroidery, contemporary quilt making, beadwork, and most recently weaving.
So what is it about fibers that intrigues you and that calls to you?
I love the tactility of it, the texture of those materials in my hands. I love the intensive hand work that's involved. I love the repetitive process of stitching or weaving or papermaking. And I also love making larger pieces, larger works from lots of many small pieces. And often I will combine elements from all these different mediums into one mixed media piece.
So when you make the small pieces, do you already know what the large piece is going to look like?
Not always. I'm still using handmade paper that I made 10 years ago.
Oh, that's fascinating. So a lot of times you'll do the smaller piece and then figure out how it's part of a bigger picture.
Yes, definitely.
So that makes me think that's kind of the way the pattern of our lives goes sometimes. We make all these little pieces and we don't really know how it all fits together.
Absolutely.
Until later.
You have to trust that eventually it will become clear, and also that you trust that there's a reason you're collecting all this stuff and keeping it.
So organization is probably a key.
It helps.
So at what point in your life did you start thinking of yourself as an artist?
Well, I was always one of those crafty kids that was making things and sewing. I was in 4-H and learned to sew.
I was in 4-H too.
Yeah. Yay, 4-H. but I started really getting into it when I was about 30, 31. I had two small kids at home, and I wanted a project that I could do that would engage me and challenge me, and I got into quilt making then. And I sort of went head over heels into it and decided fairly quickly that I needed to learn how to design my own patterns. And so I went back to art school and started working on that degree in fiber art. And that was the beginning. So I was, you know, in my mid-30s.
So I think that's fascinating. I didn't even realize that there were specific degrees in fiber art.
Well, it was a degree in fine art or visual art, but I really focused mostly on fibers. There was a great program at the University of Louisville and a lot of good support in that community for craft as art.
And was that the area that you were living at the time, or did you seek out that university?
I was living in Louisville. Yeah,
I love how that works out.
Yeah, it was great. It was one of those great happy accidents.
One of those God winks.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
Exactly, yeah.
So I'm interested in how you describe your spirituality.
I am a Christian. Specifically, I'm a member of Alpharetta Presbyterian Church.
And that's a church here in Georgia.
Yes, in Alpharetta, Georgia.
And then how does your spirituality find expression in your art?
Well, in several ways. In my personal work, I'm often inspired by the natural world, as so many artists are. And for me, the natural world really is the best evidence that I see for the existence of God and the goodness of God and the beauty of God. And even though that the natural world is pretty in trouble right now, you know, it's been despoiled, that beauty is still there and that sacredness is still there. So that inspires me on a personal level. At my church, I helped to found and I helped to lead a team of liturgical artists, and we do projects. We make banners and paraments for the sanctuary that enhance worship in a visual way. We also do temporary installations. We do exhibitions where we sponsor exhibitions of work by the congregation or by other congregations. And we also do some art making activities with different groups. So we're trying to bring everyone into art making and to see it as something that we're all entitled to do. It's not just a special thing for a few lucky people.
Well, and that kind of brings me to two different questions based on your answer there. So my first question is, when you say that you're inspired by the natural world, what do you do to be part of that natural world? What are some of the activities that you do to see what inspires you?
I go for a lot of hikes. when I had my solo show in 2009, most of the work in it was inspired by a couple of hikes I did in North Georgia along Dodd Creek, where Ravencliff Falls is. And it's a beautiful hike. I would recommend it to anybody, even if you're not a real outdoorsy type. It's only a couple miles long. It's spectacular. Lots of little waterfalls leading up to the big one. And when I did that hike, I got sort of hypnotized by the flowing water. And my mind was sort of blown by the fact that this water is always flowing, whether I'm looking at it or not, whether anybody's looking at it, whatever it looks like, how night or day, summer, winter, this water is always flowing. And it just was such an amazing concept. And it reminded me again, I'm not in control of any of this. And I am just a happy bystander, and time is flowing too. And I became very aware of the idea that time is flowing around me, through me, despite my best efforts to corral it, control it, or organize it. You know, I don't go anywhere without my planner. But one of the first pieces I wanted to make after this epiphany that I had on this hike was a sort of a deconstructed planner, in which I tried to suggest that the water was flowing through and obliterating all the careful distinctions of days and hours and controlling mechanisms that we have for time.
Well, and I think that's interesting that you talk about, you know, the water flows regardless of if we are there or not, and in spite of our efforts,
yes,
to control it, and time flows in spite of our efforts to control it. And I find that I can make myself really miserable the more I try to control things.
Absolutely.
Because there are so many things that are out of my control.
Right. And that's such a huge part of my faith journey as well, is learning that God's in control, despite my best efforts to take his job.
Say, okay, God, you know what you're talking about. I'll let you do it.
Right. Again.
Well, and when you go on your hikes, do you take a notebook, or do you take a camera, or do you just have it in your head, and when you get back to your studio, you put some ideas on paper?
Usually I have a camera, and I worked a lot on the Dodd Creek pieces with actually printing those digital photographs on fabric and then embroidering over and around
them, cool,
using them as parts of small art quilts, so that the photographs are in the piece. Sometimes close-ups, sometimes overall views of the waterfall.
And do you find that you have to translate what those ideas were pretty quickly after you get back to the studio? Or is it something that once you take the photos, you can revisit them later?
Yeah, the photos are great for allowing you to revisit later. And the longer I worked on this series, the more my ideas changed and developed. And at that time, Georgia got into that very serious drought we had. And so the drought began to influence my ideas about where the series should go what else I could say with this metaphor of water and flowing river and so forth. So
that work, what was the end result of that work?
There were 11 pieces. Most of them were pieces for the wall, small framed fiber collages that had a lot of intensive bead embroidery and hand stitching in them.
Oh, that sounds fascinating.
Thanks.
Do you have any photographs of that work?
They're on my website, mollyelkind.com.
Well, be sure and send us a few of those, and I'll put them on with the description for this interview as well. So, and then my second question from your comment that you made a few minutes ago was talking about the team that you work with at your church and the artwork that you all create. So I'm curious how that evolved? Was that something that was your idea to put it together, or was it somebody else's idea, or how did that group come together?
Again, it was sort of an effort that sort of fell into place as a happy coincidence. One of our members of the church bought a couple of banners, hangings from the, she actually bought them from the High Museum, and they were reproductions of a Van Gogh painting of an olive grove. And they hung beautifully on either side of our rose window. And one of the other members of the church who co-founded the team with me and helps me lead it realized that these banners were green and they fit for ordinary time, which is the green season that lasts for through the whole summer and into the fall. But when the green season was over, we needed something else to put up there. Then it was Advent and we needed some purple banners. And she said, we got to get together and make some purple banners. So we did that. And then we realized, well, after Advent, there's Christmas and we need something white and so forth. So for the first, and I began to feel like, you know, I'd like some help with this. and not just in the sense of help getting the banners made, but also some other input. I didn't want it just to be my vision in front of the congregation, but I really wanted other people to participate in that vision. Studio work can be lonely, and I really liked the idea of collaborating. And so we sort of put out the word, you know, even if you don't think you're artistic, come and play with us. Come have fun. We'll learn as we go. And so for the first 2 or 3 years, pretty much all we did was make banners for the liturgical year, for all the seasons and colors. And now we have a nice sort of wardrobe of more than one set even for each season.
Can you describe how that collaboration, like, for example, for the Advent banners, how did that collaboration happen? How did everybody determine what their role was or what the work was going to look like? Or
actually, a better example that I'd like to tell you about is a series of a couple of banners that we did just recently called The Woven Community.
Okay. And oh, what a cool topic.
It's such a cool set of banners. Again, we have these two slots that have sort of a predetermined size, so that we knew we needed two banners about 2 feet by 8 feet. And we wanted this to be a project in which the whole congregation could participate. So we put out the call for everyone to bring in a scrap of fabric that was meaningful to them or their family. And we got all sorts of fabrics. We got sweaty T-shirts from mission trips. We got pieces of wedding gowns and wedding veils. We got Boy Scout kerchiefs, neckties, pieces of fabric from the baby's nursery, baby onesies. I mean, everything you can imagine that was meaningful to people.
And so this was out for the whole church. Could submit scraps of fabric.
Exactly. So we collected all different kinds and colors and everything. And we knew, again, these had to be sort of for ordinary times. So we especially asked for greens and we supplemented it. But at the time we started this, none of us knew how to weave, really. We didn't have looms and we had a very small budget. But we just sort of forged ahead and we sort of trusted that all these things would come in time. And of course they did. Somebody volunteered to help us construct 2 big vertical looms out of wood and we put them up in the fellowship hall. And then we learned from books and from trial and error how to warp the looms, how to get the vertical strings on there and keep them still enough and taut enough that we could weave these scraps in and out. And we worked on weaving those scraps in and out for months. Trial and error, putting them in, taking them out. And it was really fun because everyone got to see the progress as we went. And they would say, oh, there's my scrap. It's in there.
So it wasn't. So the scraps are not flat. They're woven in as like a piece of thread almost.
Right, exactly. We cut them into strips. And so the strips of fabric were like the pieces of thread in a piece of woven
cloth. And then did you have to sew the scraps together to make one continuous thread? Or you were able just to do individual?
We just wove them in as they were and tucked the ends in the back. And we sort of, we made up a sort of a design as we went that featured sort of, it looks very sedimentary. It almost looks like sedimentary rock. There are flat layers like strata, and then there are these little blobs. We called them little sort of circular organic forms. And then near the top, we decided we didn't want to make it solid all the way to the top. So there are sort of zigzaggy forms that look sort of like stems or trees going up towards the sky, and it's sort of more open at the top. So there is this sense of growth, which is the theme of ordinary time, spiritual growth. So they worked out really well.
And so did you try to make the two match?
They're very similar, but they're not exactly the same.
So were you doing them at the same time?
Yes.
So you could kind of see?
Yes, we had them both going at the same time.
Oh, I think that's fascinating.
Yeah.
And so different people actually worked on the loom.
Yes, the whole team worked on the loom. We all took turns weaving and giving each other our opinions and, you know, standing back and saying, oh, we need a little bit more light color here or take out that dark over there. And it was definitely collaborative effort. And that was a real example for us of how the spirit can work in a collaborative setting and in a setting where people start out not really knowing where they're headed. But it ended up being one of the congregation's favorite projects.
So did you have certain times of the week that people could come and
yes.
be part of the process?
Yes. We did have, you know, definitely scheduled work times, and anyone who wanted to could certainly come by and help us weave.
Oh, that's fascinating. And you said it took a few months.
It did. One of the things that people started mocking us after a while, they'd come in and say, aren't y'all done yet? Because weaving is a very slow process. Like, no, not yet. We're working on it.
That's really fascinating. And what a sense of belonging that everybody
exactly.
has because of that artwork.
Exactly. And that's where this became such a great metaphor that we didn't really fully anticipate, how all these individual scraps that don't seem to go together could, when woven together with hope and affection, you know, form a coherent whole that really symbolized the way the congregation is knit together.
And you called that the interwoven community?
The woven community.
The woven community.
Yes. And that's on the, we have a blog for our liturgical art team, and it's liturgicalart.blogspot.com.
Okay.
And so you can see pictures of that there.
So folks can go to that
yes.
blog and see pictures of
yes.
the interwoven, to the woven community
yes.
banners.
Yes.
That's fascinating. So I would think it would be hard to take those down, to put the other ones up.
You're very you're very wise. They are very hard to move because they're kind of fragile at the top where the threads are looser. So we only move them twice a year.
But I would think, but even just from the emotional connection of the people in the
yes.
in the congregation to those pieces, that
yes.
it would be hard to take them
yes.
down.
Well, they just move to another place in the church when
okay.
that season is over. So
oh,
they're always on display
always
somewhere.
Up. Oh, that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And we have a couple of the members of the team spent a ton of time actually making a map that people could look
oh my
at
goodness.
And figure out where exactly in each banner their family scraps are.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, it is.
So how many people do you think were involved in the, not counting the people that donated scraps, but how many people do you think were involved in the actual creation from building the looms to creating the...
I would say 8 or 10.
Okay. So did you find that that some people became involved in it that didn't think of themselves as artists at the beginning of the process?
Definitely, yes.
And did it change the way that they thought about?
I think so. I it's been a real joy for me to see people who never allowed themselves to use the word art in the same sentence as their own name, you know, to never think of themselves as artists, to realize that they have that ability. We all have it, and we just have to give ourselves permission to let it out and play with it.
I agree with you. I think we all have it, and I think it shows up in different ways, and it's up to us to figure that out and honor that.
Yes, yes.
Bring our gift to the world.
Yes.
So
yes.
Are you all working on another project at your church now?
Yes. We there are a couple of niches in the church that need some kind of three-dimensional work in them, and again, we're going to try to put out the call to the congregation to help us to have a rotating display of artwork in those niches. They're just outside the sanctuary, so they're pretty high visibility spots, and they just need some new work in there.
So you're not going to have a specific idea of what should go in that niche. It might be different types of things that would go into
exactly,
the niche.
Exactly. But it's probably going to need to be three-dimensional.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah. So what kind of things are you working on with your personal work at this point?
Well, right now I'm a weaver. And so I make hand-woven scarves and shawls, and but I'm also beginning to think about ways in which I can bring the weaving into the liturgical work, whether it's as banners or other maybe backdrops in the niches. We'll see.
You know, one of the things that my dad passed away earlier this year, but when he was ill and in the hospital, one of the churches in the area made a prayer shawl for my
nice.
For my dad, which I thought was really wonderful, where uh-huh. they had created, you know, it was a knitted prayer shawl,
mm-hmm.
and they
mm-hmm.
had prayed over it, and
mm-hmm.
then it made both my dad and my mom feel so loved by
mm-hmm.
this community of people.
Mm-hmm. That's a great ministry.
Yeah, I think I hadn't heard of that before, and now since then I've seen, you know, several churches that have that listed as one of the ministries that they have available.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's really cool. So I know that you talked a little bit about how your ideas come to you, that you said nature inspires you.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you decide which ideas to pursue?
that's always a problem because there's always more ideas than there is time. For me, I've done so many different media because I love learning new things and I love new challenges. So often I'll choose to follow an idea that allows me to learn something new and challenges me to go in a new direction. But I also try to relate it to what I've done before so that my work does have some coherence. So that's kind of a tightrope that I try to walk.
So I know you mentioned that you are a mom. Do your mm-hmm. kids, are they involved in any of this art that you pursue?
Occasionally they'll wander through and give me comments. They're away at college or graduated at this point, so they're not on the scene on a daily basis. But they're definitely encouraging.
So it sounds like you get a lot of support with the other artists at your church. Mm-hmm. What are some other ways that you get support? I know you mentioned earlier that, you know, being in the studio can be a very lonely thing.
Yes. I connect with other groups of artists and fiber artists. I think it's really important if you're working alone a lot to also make an effort to get out of the studio and be with other people who get what you're doing and who are, you know, dealing with the same kinds of issues and challenges. And so I'm a member of the Chattahoochee Hand Weavers Guild, which is a great place for fiber artists here in Atlanta. The Surface Design Association. There's a group that's just formed called CIFA, the Southeast Fiber Artists Association, which is sort of an umbrella group for many different fiber arts, and they're offering exhibit space and classrooms and classes. So there's lots going on locally if you're interested in this.
So fiber artists that might be listening to this from other parts of the country could mm-hmm. probably just go online and search for
Absolutely.
Support groups for fiber artists in their area.
Yes, just Google fiber arts, weaving, quilt making is a huge branch of the fiber arts. Any of those terms that you're specifically interested in. There's guilds out there for everything.
And are there some national organizations
Absolutely.
That support them?
There's national organizations for all of these.
And they might be able to direct you to more local groups
definitely,
as well.
Definitely, right.
Okay. So how has your art affected your spiritual evolution, or how has your spiritual evolution affected your art?
They've really, for me, gone hand in hand. Looking back now, I was away from church for 20 years. I grew up in the church, and then I went to college like so many people do, and I sort of fell away for a long time, for 20 years. And then I got into my early 40s, and by this time I'd already been working in art for a while, and I really think now that God sort of used art to lure me back into a life of faith, which is an odd thing to say, but that's the way it felt and feels. I had been working as an English teacher, wielding that red pen and circling everybody's mistakes on their essays, and it was beginning to feel like a sort of soul-killing activity to always be the critic in that way. And I wanted to look for work that could allow me to say yes instead of no. You know, yes mm-hmm. to possibilities, yes to creativity, yes to making mistakes and picking up and going on, yes to that uncertain process of creating. And so making art allowed me to do that, and I think that's what, as I got into that process, I began to realize that this was bigger than me. There is something else going on here besides my own brain and my own abilities. There's a creative force that's moving through me, and that allowed me to come back to a life of faith.
So you mentioned mistakes. I think a lot of when I talk to people that don't think of themselves as artists, they think that because they can't put something out perfectly, that it's not art.
Right.
So can you talk a little bit about how mistakes work into your art?
Mistakes are just a part of the process. And often the mistakes actually turn out to be very happy accidents that the joke is, it's not a mistake, it's a design element. If you
That's
do that
right.
more than once, then it's a part of the piece. And often they'll be better than what you had in mind originally. But even when they're not, they're just a crucial part of learning a technique and of growing as an artist. And one of the really important things I learned in grad school was to make samples. We weren't allowed to start work on our final piece unless we had made at least half a dozen sample or practice pieces. And that was so important because you got a feel for the technique. You got over your anxieties. You got the mistakes out of the way. And then when you did the final piece, you didn't have all that anxiety. And you were able to do pretty much what you wanted. You had control over the technique.
And you might be able to figure out what mistakes you wanted to intentionally put into the bigger piece.
Exactly. And I have drawers full of those samples now, and they're like a great reference library.
I have an interesting question. If you make all these sample pieces, doesn't that become part of the art?
I've had people tell me the samples look like, well, that looks like a piece in itself. I'm like, oh, no, that's just a sample, but I like it. Can I buy it? I'm like, no, that's just a sample. Sometimes they do have a freshness and a spontaneity that the final piece, because it's been rehearsed, sometimes doesn't have. So that's a good point.
So that's interesting that as an artist, you don't want to let go of your sample.
I don't.
Because you don't feel like it's the finished piece.
That's right. And it's also my crucial reference point, you know, that I might go back to in a couple years ago. Oh, yeah, I remember how to do that.
That's interesting. So I know that we're getting close on our time here, but I'm also interested in how you connect to flow when you're creating, how you connect to God, or how you let that flow come through you when you're creating your art.
I'd like to say that I always start with praying to God or to the Spirit to be with me. But to be honest, I have to confess that usually I just plunge right in, and I trust that that Spirit is going to be there if I'm listening. And I try to attune myself to where the piece wants to go, which sounds sort of mystical, but you get to a certain point in making something and it starts to have its own mind, and it may go in a different direction than you originally intended. And so I try to be alert to that and sensitive to that. And when I work with the team at church doing the liturgical art, we definitely begin with prayer, and we've found that it always goes better when we do that. And because it puts us in a frame of mind of, again, being sensitive to each other's divine creativity and to the idea that this is a collaborative enterprise and that we are part of something bigger. It's not any one person's vision or any one person's ideas.
So it sounds like that your process is more about the intention of listening to what shows up than any particular preparation in advance.
Yes, and it's always a dance back and forth. I've worked both ways, where I've tried to really plan everything out ahead of time, and then I've worked very spontaneously. And in each case, it's like I said, it's a dance. You have to have some kind of plan, but you have to constantly be open to amending it and following it where it wants to go.
That's true. Well, I so appreciate you being here with us today. How can our listeners find out more about you and your work and commission you for projects and buy your work?
You can visit my website, which is www.mollyelkind.com.
And Molly's M-O-L-L-Y, Elkind, E-L-K-I-N-D.
That's correct. That's correct. And then the liturgical art is liturgicalart.blogspot.com. Or you can also link to that from the Alpharetta Presbyterian Church website. You can just Google Alpharetta Presbyterian.
Well, great. Well, Molly, thank you so much for being with us today. This has really been a fascinating show, and I am so appreciative that you made the time to come out. Just one more time, tell our listeners the name of your website and spell it for them so they can find you.
Okay, mollyelkind.com. It's M-O-L-L-Y-E-L-K-I-N-D.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
I want to thank our listeners. I welcome your suggestions and your comments about this or any of our shows. You can find links to all of our shows on empowerradio.com or also on our website, artasworship.net. Please come share your stories of art as worship on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/artasworship, or suggest an artist that we should interview. Listen in next week as we talk with another artist about their creative process and how it connects with their spiritual journey. May you have an inspired and creative week. Namaste.